The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Man in Line today is with the Treasury Minister. Dr. Allinson is on. Alex Allinson, MHK, one of the Ramsey MHKs. So if you've got any questions about the financial future, the financial present, then by all means do get in touch. Usual ways, text 166177, email studio at maxradio.com, WhatsApp 166177, call 661368. Pastor Mike, good afternoon, Treasury Minister.
Good afternoon, Andy, and to all the listeners there. And thanks very much for asking me to come on the programme again.
Not at all. Just behind you over your left shoulder, you'll see that the Bank of England has cut the interest rate to 4%.
Yep.
Any thoughts on that?
I mean, it was widely advertised, and obviously what the government there and the Bank of England, which is independent, but what they're trying to do is balance the cost of living with the inflation, which has gone up quite a bit in the UK recently. Ours is tracking less than that, but they are in a difficult position, and at the same time I think there is that real will to try to reduce the cost of borrowing, particularly for those people on mortgages who saw quite a rapid hike after the famous Liz Truss budget, and we're just about recovering from that, and I think these are the lowest levels we've had in the last 2 years. What will happen now is the knock-on effect in terms of savings rates for people on the island, and also mortgage rates, and we'll be working with the banks to make sure that we follow in line with the UK and give that benefit of lower mortgages to people living here.
Okay, lots of questions to get to, and a couple in, including one from Jan, and it's regarding social housing and the Treasury's role in funding social housing for local authorities. I understand there's a bit of a queue, isn't there?
We're trying to get over that. So we're talking here about local authorities who borrow money. We have a loan facility organised with one of the big banks on the Isle of Man, and they borrow money and then pay it off through the rates and obviously through rents to fund both refurbishment of existing properties, but also we've seen some big new builds recently, particularly in the Douglas area, and it's trying to meet the needs of social housing. Now, what happens is that those requests, petitions to borrow money are taken through the Department for Infrastructure, who are responsible for local authorities, and then if they're happy, they then come on to Treasury. And I think there has been a bit of a delay because we have what's called a housing deficiency fund to meet the shortfall. So it doesn't necessarily, you know, if people are borrowing quite a bit of money and are unable to pay that back because they're keeping rents low, then government will step in and deal with the shortfall. What we did in this year's budget is actually ring fence that and take that out of the Department for Infrastructure, have that separate, so that we can speed up the process, because we know that we need to refurbish social housing, we need more social housing, we need to deal with the provision of rental accommodation right across the piece on the Isle of Man, because it is an issue. And so by having a ring-fenced housing deficiency fund, we hope we can speed up the process an awful lot. And also, I've been working particularly with the Ramsey Commissioners in terms of a couple of their big projects, but also with Douglas City Corporation in terms of their 10-year housing plan, to see how we can bring this online for the benefit of everyone on the island, including obviously the construction industry.
Okay, so how long do you think it will be before the new builds in Ramsey or the refurbishments and Douglas will go ahead?
I mean, in terms of Douglas, they're now looking again at their needs, and I think there has been a growth both there and in the north for one-bedroom apartments. Now, we used to tend to try to build two-bedroom apartments for people. There are quite a few single people now for many, many different reasons, who need accommodation, who are on low incomes. So both in the north and in Douglas and the other local authorities, looking again at who's on their housing list, what sort of accommodation they need, also looking at perhaps elderly people, people with disabilities who are currently in family homes who want to downsize and move out, so that we can actually look at the housing stock and have it fitting the exact demographics of the people who need it.
Okay. Let's get to the phones now. David's with us first today. David, hi, you're live with Dr. Allinson.
Hi, Randy and Dr. Allison there. Can I just try and get an answer from you to dispel any rumours? I'm really concerned when meeting groups now that people are talking about people coming from across, staying at the Palace Hotel, top floor. These are all rumours, but they're getting a grip of an older generation, and then people saying their Treasury is funding their stay on the island. We're getting reimbursed from the UK, and they can get jobs and so forth. I just wonder whether you could put some statement from you as the Treasury Minister and a member of the Council Ministers to say this is not happening.
Well, number one, thanks very much for calling in, David, and thanks for bringing this issue up. I think all of us, when we turn on the news at the moment, we see appalling scenes of boats packed with people coming over the channel, people drowning, but also the role of organised crime in terms of people smuggling into the UK. And when you look at that and you then think, well, is the same thing happening here? We've also seen riots outside hotels in the UK. And some of that, yes, is far right and racist, but some of that is genuinely concerned local people who are worried about what's happening. On the Isle of Man, we do not have asylum seekers here. There's no legal way that people could come here and seek asylum. We also do not house asylum seekers for the UK government. They have no right to remain on the Isle of Man. And in the past, when people have come here without rights to remain, they have been sent off the island. So there is no accommodation for asylum seekers here, illegal immigration, illegal migrants here. We have a very, very different situation to the UK in that you don't get access to benefits or social housing, as we were just talking about, until you've been resident for at least 5 years. So there isn't the same draw for people to come here. They would not be housed. They would not be given benefits. I know there have been rumours of various hotels around the Isle of Man. We have done investigations with our immigration services. There are no contracts with UK companies to house asylum seekers on the Isle of Man. But I can understand people's concern given what's happening on the adjacent isle. And we, as a government, are looking far more now over the last couple of years at our border security, at immigration in general. And in July, Tim Wald came forward with a whole range of proposals, such as the immigration health surcharge, such as looking at how we could make sure that those people who are needed by our employers here to drive the economy and fill those skill gaps are the right people coming across and actually contribute to our society. I hope that answers your question, but I think there is a lot of concern out there, and also a lot of rumours spread on social media that can get traction if they're not corrected.
David?
Yeah, that, top notch. I appreciate that, the answers there, because that's from the what they call the horse's mouth, and that's true. And then when all these people are circulating this information, it's disinformation, and people do panic. And can you add on?
Yeah,
Ogden to the list as well, because we're looking for funding for Springfield Court.
Absolutely. And Onken have got a relatively small amount of social housing stock, but what they want to do is do it up, make it much better for the people living there, but do it in a way that they don't have to move everyone out while they renovate it and put new windows in and new insulation to drive down energy costs. So we've certainly looked at that already and are very supportive of what Onken are trying to do.
Okay, thanks.
Good.
David. All right, now 12:15. Dr. Allison, I want to nail this once for all. Where do these silly rumours come from? Is it too much television?
I don't think very much of it is malicious. I think what tends to happen is we look at what's happening across in both the United States. When Trump came in, he made immigration and building walls a really strong policy. We've seen it becoming one of the dominant political issues in the UK and people using it for political aims. I think when people on the Isle of Man look, people on the high street, they will notice a change. When Brexit happened, we suddenly exited from the EU. I mean, if you think before that, we had lots of people from Poland, from Romania, from Spain, from Italy coming over here for seasonal work, for building work, for hospitality work. A lot of them went back to their own countries, and actually the Polish economy is doing very well. They took the money that they made in here or the UK and built their own homes for their families. And so when you look at the new immigration, it's more from other countries rather than just European countries. So So we published data recently showing that when you look at the people applying for immigration visas, they are from places like the Philippines, South Africa, India, Pakistan. Now this is what's happening across, but also when you're looking at IT workers, it's those people coming over. Yeah. So I've certainly noticed the difference when my kids were growing up in terms of the class photos. There were more people from other communities. Yeah. We've always been a diverse community, but perhaps now it's been more obvious than before. And people are looking at that, then looking at what's happening in the news, thinking, well, are all these people, should they be here? Yeah. Are they able to come here? Are they actually working and contributing to the community? The answer is yes, they are. But there are those concerns. And I think it's government's role to respond to those concerns, to look at the incentives and disincentives for migration from wherever it is, whether it's from somebody coming over from the UK or somebody coming over from Cape Town, and making sure that those people are welcome, but also making sure that those people integrate to our society and contribute to our society.
Talking of class photos, I've noticed that in the past 5 years, taking Manningline round to the high schools, yep. It's changed. The complexion, the makeup of the year 12s and year 13s has changed. And
because let's be honest, we are talking here about migration, immigration and race. Yep. And the Isle of Man has always been a melting pot. We're in the middle of the Irish Sea. We get whoever's coming from one side or the other. When you look at, I was watching the rugby at the weekend, the British Lions, you look at the makeup of that. That's the representatives of the British Isles. And you've got people like Atoje there, who's captain of the team. Yeah. You've got Bendiaki there, who's a very proud Irishman. These people are now part of their society. Yeah. And our society has changed. And for the better, because certainly my daughter is really into Manx culture and Manx music. When you look at some of those people whose parents came over several decades ago from the Philippines, they were born in this country, they've embraced the culture, they're now taking to the stage in Lorient, performing Manx songs and dancing Manx jigs. That's what the Isle of Man should embrace, that those people who want to come here make this their home, but also contribute to our society.
Okay, a final word, and this is from Sandra, who dropped a note in just to say, and let's face it, without immigration, and particularly Pacific immigration, the care industry will be up a gum tree if we didn't have lots of people from Thailand or the Philippines.
That's true. I mean, one of the things certainly in the north was a lot of the people who work in the care homes, but also then they've moved on to the college hospital. Are originally their families were from the Philippines, and they've moved over here at a time where perhaps people from Europe who used to do those jobs aren't prepared to come over. I really welcome them, but at the same time, there is a real need for the Isle of Man to look at the people who are already living here, whatever the colour of their skin, to make sure they have the opportunities, the training to take up those jobs as well. And I know that there are many nursing homes that will train their staff up, local people as well, rather than just having to bring people from across. So it's getting that balance right that I think is very important for our society.
612 dropped a note in. Jason, can the minister confirm when the government's actually going to sort out a cohesive tax policy that isn't tailored purely to wealthy people? We raise next to nothing from multiple property owners, for example. Several years ago, the minister said, quote, those that have more will pay more. Then effectively just hit single earners via the tax code reduction above 100,000 from Jason.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Jason. I set out a tax strategy back in 2023, we tried to look at overall how we could get a more progressive taxation system. Part of that is increasing personal allowances, and we did that again in this year's budget, and I'm planning to do it in next year's budget. Part of it was also tapering off the personal allowance. Those are earning over £100,000. We've also looked at property taxes in terms of making sure that those people who buy properties that aren't their own home, they pay a higher fee, our version of stamp duty, and also looked at a range of changes to the corporation tax system in terms of what's called the Pillar 2. So those big multinational companies who are based here pay a minimum corporation tax of 15%, and we actually brought that in a year early for the banks. So I completely understand that his point of view, that really on the Isle of Man, what we tend to do is tax people, particularly working people, because we don't have inheritance tax, we don't have capital gains tax, and our corporation tax is relatively low to encourage the financial services sector to be here, which is very important for our economy. But what we will be and what we are always conscious of is working families on this island and making sure that they get the chance, the opportunities to make a decent living and actually have a decent standard of life with that money that they earn.
Are things equitable as it stands at the moment for working people, particularly young families, young couples with a couple of children?
No. I'll be quite honest. I think when you look at what inflation has done over the years, when you look at the rate, the increase in house prices that's taken place over the years, particularly since COVID, it has been a real strain for what are often called the squeeze middle, those people who aren't on benefits, who don't get anything from the state, who are working hard to provide for their family, but are finding it tough. It's difficult. Now, that isn't just the Isle of Man. That I think that's worldwide, but we need to respond to that. And part of that is making sure that we're not taking money out of the economy to drive it down, but making sure that some of that wealth that's created is distributed and spread evenly. And so that's why we, as a government, we've been really keen on raising the minimum wage, why we've been looking at employment rights, but also why we've been looking at some of the reskilling and also driving down unemployment to make sure people have a chance to earn here. You were talking about the reduction in interest rates. I'm hoping that will make mortgages more affordable, but the private rental sector now is really quite overheated. It's difficult to get private rental accommodation, and actually in terms of renters, their rights and ability to get homes is confined on the Isle of Man compared with across. So there is a whole lot of work that government are doing and need to continue to do to make it easier for people to enjoy living on the Isle of Man.
Okay, lots of questions to get to, and the phones are full as well. So just one question for the moment, briefly, if you could. Do you think there's any point or in the future that the government will start investing in cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, as it's become a store of value in many countries around the world, small or big, are now putting Bitcoin on their balance sheets?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of cryptocurrencies, we've certainly been aware of them ever since they started. And obviously, Bitcoin was the first and probably the most well-known, but there are lots of other cryptocurrencies. They have no substantial basis. I mean, there have been various some jurisdictions who've tried to back them to a degree, but they are a speculative investment and they can go up and down quite rapidly, particularly in terms of certain political comments made by people can make them sort. There's also been a significant amount of fraud with people's wallets being stolen by hackers, and also the real concern that cryptocurrencies, because they bypass conventional banking, are used by organised crime to transfer large amounts of money, which goes towards funding some of the illegal migration and people traffickers, drug traffickers, and everything else that goes on. So I think cryptocurrency in itself is a really interesting concept. I'm more interested in the blockchain that lies behind it, because in terms of an automatic ledger, that's really interesting. Government are aware of it, but we don't invest in it because we invest very carefully people's money in terms of the reserves. But we also work with the FSA to look at the licensing of those who are dealing with crypto assets to make sure that it's above board and doesn't act as a lure for organised crime to infiltrate our banking system.
Okay. Julian. Hello, Julian. You're live with Dr. Allinson.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Alex.
Hello there. Sorry you were pipped to the post by David this time.
Yes, but he's very eloquent and I like listening to him, so not a problem. By the way, Bitcoin and blockchains were always designed to be free from government control. That was the whole philosophy behind it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I find it interesting that government wants to get control of it in some ways. But
it's not control. I mean, blockchain itself as an automatic ledger is a fantastic tool for making sure that you've got the authenticity of what you're dealing with. And particularly, I know people are looking at that with carbon credits and making sure that they're actually based in reality rather than something that's made up.
Yeah, I know. But to tackle crime, you'd have to get hold of the keys to make sure that you could find out what... it would be a bit like forcing everyone to divulge the serial numbers on their fivers in their pockets, I suppose.
But anyway, your question.
I noticed that following your announcement of a 2% health levy, a leaked document a couple of days ago from Manx Care shows a need for a further cut of 5 operations per week or 260 less operations per year by November, unless further funding is found. I find this timing rather convenient. Is this some sort of a strategy to make the public accept the levy? when the better option, in my opinion, would be for all of government to draw its horns in, stop expensive vanity projects like the Carevi wind farm and business-destroying 20-mile-an-hour blanket rollouts. And my second related question is, Treasury has ultimate power over the steam packet company. Why is the freight cost so much higher than the average rate, which again hurts local businesses, both for imports and exports, along with tourism?
Okay, steam, Manx Care first then.
Oh, loads of things to tackle. Thanks very much, Julian. So first of all, no, there is no conspiracy between it. What we were looking at with the consultation was for looking for people's views on the introduction of what's basically a hypothecated healthcare tax, healthcare levy, which would then go towards the funding gap, which has been identified because the rate of increase in terms of healthcare funding outstrips conventional inflation. And there's good evidence for that here, but also evidence right across the Western world for that. So we got the results of the consultation, and actually an awful lot of people have responded to say, I'd be quite happy to pay more for the healthcare system, but actually what you need to do is get overall government spending under control before you take more money out of people's pockets. And I would agree with that. When you're talking about the number of operations cut by Manx Care, what they were talking about was operating lists, and I think they've been at pains to say that the total number of operations would remain the same. But I think healthcare have already said that in the first quarter of this year they are running at a deficit. They are spending more money than the budget that was allocated by Tim Wald back in February. And so it's absolutely their responsibility to look at their activity costs and try to deal with that. And if they can get more productivity and efficiency out of their operating list, they should do that. Coming on to the Alaman Steam Packet Company, as you're aware, there was a big Timball debate about this. A working party has been set up, which involves not just Treasury, but also the Department for Enterprise and the Department for Infrastructure, who run the ports for us, looking at how we can maximise the economic benefit of the Steam Packet Company, but at the same time make sure that they're making enough profits to buy the new vessels they need. And we know, even from this morning, with the problems with the Mananan, we're dealing with an aging fleet, both in terms of the Fast Craft and the Ben McCree, and they will need replacement. And so that money needs to come very much from the company itself to actually put that infrastructure investment in so that we can have a more secure and reliable link to the UK and to Ireland.
Right, yeah. So on the first one with Manx Care, I seem to remember, was it around £166,000 will be saved by shaving off the operations? But the cost of Manx Care at the moment is about 2,500 times that. So it seems that it's something so important as operations, even if they're elective, seems to be it's not going to save you a lot of money, is it? But it's going to cause a lot of angst.
Okay. Just a final word, if you would, Julian, because we've got people lined up.
Yeah, sure. I just find that these large, expensive things like hundreds of millions on interconnectors and at least 40 to 100 million on a wind farm, these huge projects, if you just didn't do it, you'd have all the resources you need, at least in the short term, while you work it out, instead of taxing everyone, and literally everyone, at 2%. Is it not time to just sort of sit back and look at what's going on in the world and maybe just draw your horns in a bit?
All right.
So to answer that question, yes. I think capital spending and revenue spending are very different. So people can criticise the Liverpool landing stage and say, look, a huge amount of money was put in that. That was a one-off cost. If Manx Care overspend by 10 million or 20 million or 30 million, that's not just that year. That's all the other following years. And what we did with the healthcare levy is show that over the last 10 years, an extra £100 million has gone in there just in terms of accumulated overspends. So it's absolutely right that we look at the value for money that the taxpayer is getting from essential services like Manx Care, like education, like our police force, to make sure that they're getting that value for money and can see where their tax money is going.
Okay, thank you, Julian. Just and a quick word, Samantha dropped a note in regarding the health levy and about Manx Care and the fact they seem to be overspending, although you told them to live within their means. And she said, look, is it time to look at another funding mechanism? In places like France, there's an element of paying by the user. The same in Germany, although the big insurers are there. In Norway, you pay the first £200 and then the state pays the rest. And I know you were in Australia for four years.
Yep.
What's the system like in Australia?
It's co-payment with a protection for those vulnerable people, low-income people, who they get a Medicare card, so you get free treatment, and everyone else pays for their procedures and pays something towards seeing a GP or having an operation. It's not the full insurance system that they have in the US or some of the hybrid systems that they've got in European countries, but very similar. I think when Sir Jonathan Michaels did his report, which is I'd like to move on from, because I think people keep on going on about that, but that was pre-COVID, that was a different time. He did, there was a whole chapter there about co-payments, about different ways of funding the NHS. The National Health Service has been one of the fundamental defining benefits of the welfare state in terms of treatment that's free at the point of need, removing that fear that if you get ill, you can't afford to be treated. And I think that's very important, and that's been very much backed by Timwald. But at the same time, we also have to be aware that the increasing costs of healthcare in all developed countries, particularly if you have a universal healthcare system, they constantly go up. And one of the issues we've got is that they're increasing faster than the growth of the economy. So each year, they're taking up a larger proportion of government spending, and therefore the amount that we're spending from people's taxation. So you either get money from more taxation or diversifying your taxation, looking into things like wealth taxes, which I've said I'm not prepared to do, or you look at the efficiencies and productivity and making the population more healthy in the first place, or you look at co-payments. I think what we need to do, and what the health minister has been at pains to show, is we need to transform our health service so that people get the right treatment at the right time early on, and they don't end up going into Noble's Hospital for expensive treatment. We have far more health prevention and spotting things like cancers and heart disease much earlier, so we can make sure people remain fit but also reduce the overall costs.
Okay, Summerland 50, Remembering the Future exhibition is on currently at the moment, so until this Saturday the 9th, the exhibition explores the years before, during and after the fire of the 2nd of August 1973. It's on now at the Villa Marina Arcade and is organised by Summerland Memorial Limited.
Hi Liz, I see you've had your garage converted. We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Meet Jane.
When Dad began forgetting the little things, we knew we needed help. Mum Benham walked us through every step.
Real stories, real solutions. Secure tomorrow today with Mum Benham.
Welcome to the Miller Chaps of Ramsey Summer Sale, where you'll find fabulous reductions throughout the store, from beds and flooring to sofas, cane furniture and accessories, rugs, pictures, mirrors and even wallpapers. Plus, the friendly Miller Chaps team are here as always with a warm welcome and expert help and advice when needed. Don't miss the Miller Chaps of Ramsey Summer Sale, now on.
Creating a home where you'll love to be. Miller Chaps of Ramsey.
You're invited to celebrate the Woodburns' 130th birthday on Saturday the 9th of August, 12 till 8 in the gardens opposite, for a free family fun day. Face painting, bouncy castle, garden games and magic with cookie and candy. Proudly supporting Crossroads and sponsored by local businesses.
Next week here on Manx Radio, we're going back to the glory days of tourism in the Isle of Man during the 1960s and 70s.
I wanted to come over to the Isle of Man. So many people must have heard it was absolutely buzzing. It was so much to do, crowds of people.
And some of the girls was coming over to the Isle of Man. I'd never really heard of it. And said, do you fancy coming? I thought, why not?
Tune in to Island Life next week for the Comeovers, to relive a golden period for tourism in the island. 5:30 Tuesday on Manx Radio FM.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And the Treasury Minister, Dr. Allenson, is here to message in from 983 and just say, could you ask the Minister why Alaman Meats hasn't done any accounts for 2 years? Nobody else would get away with this. Are you aware of this?
I've been working with DEFRA and the DEFRA Minister, Minister Barber, in terms of Alaman Meats. There have been a couple of quite recent changes in the board, in various staff members, so I know that they are slightly behind in terms of their published accounts, but I understand that they are feeding in that financial information to the department, who are aware of the various stresses and strains. But again, the meat plant itself has been through some big documented challenges in terms of making sure that farmers on the Isle of Man get a decent price for their food, but also making sure that has a market to go to, both on and off the island, and I think that there's still an awful lot of work to do on that, in that front.
Okay, a message in now. This is regarding the 21.3 million
yes.
surplus. A lot of people are saying, why didn't you see it was coming?
In terms of the budget, it is always a forecast, and we knew that taxation had gone up. We knew that the interest rates had gone up, so people would be earning more money on their deposits on the Isle of Man. But what we hadn't particularly forecast was some of the large bonuses that were paid out by private companies and the extra tax revenue that came in. The tax department are always very prudent in terms of their forecasts. They always tend to underestimate. Because we can't spend money that we haven't got. So this was ahead of the forecast. We thought we would get increased tax receipts, but not quite to this level because of all the changes we've seen in the economy. The work we're doing now is to look at the longer term over the next couple of years, whether this is going to be sustained. And things like the reduction in the interest rates today will mean that obviously people will be getting less interest and therefore paying less tax on it. So it is a moving feast. But what it means is that the £15.3 million overspend and supplementary bid that went in for health can now be met by the increased revenue, rather than drawn down from reserves. And we're trying to put more money back into reserves for the first time in quite a considerable period.
Okay. Note him from Liz D, who says, four of my children were born in the old Jane Crookall. Yep. There was a small fee to pay, graduating from general to semi-private to private. So that used to happen then. Are you aware of that?
I must admit, no, because by the time I got over here, it ceased to be a maternity hospital, and all that had moved to the new Nobles. I know in the past you could upgrade and go to a private room for a payment. What we've had in recent times is obviously the private wing at Nobles, and there's been concerted effort to reopen that, to put it up to standard, to actually bring in that optional extra income that would help fund the health service over here. But it has to be optional rather than compulsory because of our NHS system.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. I've worked in hospitals in the UK where you've got TVs at the end of the bed, but you have to pay to have them turned on. We haven't gone that way on the islands, and I think we're better for it. But I think that it is part of a wider conversation about healthcare funding, and how we allow everyone who uses healthcare, allow them to contribute to it.
Yeah. If they did return the private wing to Nobles Hospital, or indeed build a new one as well, would that be a net benefit? Would that be a net earner for the Isle of Man? Because there are many, I would say hundreds, possibly thousands of people on Athol Street and around that have private healthcare as part of their terms and conditions.
Yep.
And have to go to the Wirral for an operation.
You need to be careful with the governance of this, because there have been various stories in the UK about consultants saying, well, you know, there's a 5-year wait for a knee replacement, but if you see me privately, I can do it next Wednesday.
Right.
We need to make sure that it is a genuine choice for people. If they want to use their health insurance, that they get that treatment privately, but they are not disadvantaged if they're having it for the NHS. I am aware that some of the insurance companies, because of the lack of private provisions here, would rather fly people across. If we could do the surgery here, it's more convenient for the person themselves. They haven't got to fly backwards and forwards, but also it would create create some revenue for nobles that could then be used to fund various NHS treatments. So I think that is an ongoing bit of work for the Department of Health and Social Care. I know Manx Care are really keen on doing it as well. And hopefully when the Health and Social Care Minister is on air next week, she can answer some of these questions. But it is something that's absolutely being pursued because it gives people that choice. And at the moment, they may be getting health insurance, not being able to use it.
Okay. Frank's with us now. Hello, Frank. You're live with the Treasury Minister.
Hi, Andy. Nice to talk to you again. Hi, Doctor.
Hello,
Frank Crompton.
Oh, hello there.
Yes, and this is an old complaint I've had for some time now. You know that I'm disabled. And it's about... I'm sorry, though, I've got to keep bringing this up. I've been trying now for years to get something done about the parking in Ramsey. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the disabled parking. Every disabled place in Ramsey is only for 1 hour.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I go and park on a disabled place, it's not worth me going in the disabled places to park. By the time I get my wheelchair out and get it back in, I'm taking up 15, 25 minutes.
Yep.
Of the parking time. And yet, if I park on the street and take up the space of an ordinary motorist, I can stay for 2 hours. So it's a bit stupid to put in 1 hour on the disabled place.
How long has it been like that, Frank?
Oh, it's been like that for years. And I've been trying for years to get the thing altered. I spoke to ministers, the government know about it. I've spoke to the... everybody concerned about it, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Okay.
Well, lovely to talk to you, Frank, and it was lovely to see you recently at the Ramsey Art Society exhibition. And I was sorry to see you now in a wheelchair because of your disability. When I've asked previously about disabled spaces, particularly on Parliament Street, it's because there aren't that many, and so they want to make sure that they get maximum usage, and so they put the hour limit. But I think the ones at what is now the Tesco car park and some of the other ones are slightly longer to give people that same two-hour disc zone. But I'll certainly take it up with the commissioners again. In terms of disabled access, I think we have made some inroads in terms of Ramsey of extra number of spaces. But you're quite right that when you're in a wheelchair, just the physical time it takes to get in and out of the car can disadvantage you if you're running to that tight timescale.
It's dispiriting, though, isn't it?
Well, I cannot put myself into Frank's position, but it must be. I can't imagine what it's like to have to, number one, find a parking space, then number two, get out of the car into a wheelchair, and then think, well, I've already used 10, 15 minutes of my 60-minute allocation. Am I going to get a ticket for this? We need to do better for disabled people and accessibility right across the island. That's, I think, a completely running battle, really, in terms of the other demands. In terms of things like parking, but I'll certainly take that up with the commissioners again to see if we can get at least some accommodation for people who can park close to the centre of town, close to the shops that they want to go to and the services they want to use, but at the same time not suddenly always having to look at their watch and run back.
And is it the commissioners that can alter it?
There's a degree where there's some leeway with the commissioners in terms of parking. There's a degree in terms of where it's DOI, but I think certainly if we can look at the provision of disabled parking, which is a responsibility under the Equality Act, but make sure that we make Ramsey and all the other towns and cities and the city in our island as accessible as possible for those who may be disabled.
Okay, Frank, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming today.
Can I just say one more thing before I go?
Yeah, by all means.
I've been speaking to many people about this and other disabled people as well, and we all feel the same. It's a waste of time having a disabled badge. If I can park on an ordinary street and get 2 hours and only get 1 hour in a disabled place, what's the point of a disabled sticker?
Okay, all right. We get your point, Frank, and thanks for calling today. Tomorrow, we're live at the Royal Manx Agricultural Show. A bevy of guests will be on there talking in the sunshine about agriculture, agribusiness, about the ecology of the Isle of Man, safeguarding the countryside, and it has to be said about the financial position of the agricultural industry and farmers. On Monday, DHSC Minister Claire Christian, MHK, will be on Man in Line.
They may try to offer you a tasty carrot. Perhaps they'll try to give you some stick. But whatever you do, don't become a money mule. It's just not worth the risk. Don't let anyone move money through your bank account, however tempted you may be. You could end up facing serious consequences, including a criminal record, bank account closure, as well as difficulty securing loans or credit in the future. A message brought to you by Isle of Man Bankers Association, Financial Crime Partnership, the IOM Constabulary, and Cyber Security Centre for the Isle of Man. For further information, visit csc.gov.im.
Quadlock is the strongest and most secure mounting system in the world for integrating your phone, camera or accessories into your outdoor pursuits and for your car, van or motorhome. See the Quadlock display at H&H Motorcycles in South Key Douglas.
This summer at the Villa Marina, RS Promotions presents Soul Train, a night of soul and Motown featuring the one and only Odyssey. Disco on down to Odyssey Classics, plus special guest Soul Kinda Wonderful with Richie Sampson of The Drifters and The Foundations. Book now at villagaiety.com or on 600 555. Soul Train, Saturday 16th of August. Presented by RS Promotions and supported by your nation station, Manx Radio.
At 5:30, you can join me, Marilyn Crellin, for Chaclair.
And it basically led me down rabbit holes of research.
Speaking the language with other speakers is completely different from memorizing your vocabulary or learning your sentence structure.
The Isle of Man is just a fun place. It's a different vibe from what I'm used to.
I mean, the Gruffalo was a bit of a challenge because of the rhyme.
That's all in Chaclair with me, Marilyn Crellin, today at 5:30.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Dr. Allenson is on, one of the Ramsey MHKs and Treasury Minister as well. Here's a message from Andrea, who just says, 538, says, could you ask Dr. Allenson, what does the Auditor General do? Was he appointed to audit government departments and identify efficiencies and savings? And, the other thing is, can people opt out of the NHS levy he's bringing in if they have private health insurance?
Oh, well, let's take the second one. The consultation was about people's attitudes towards paying extra that was ring-fenced to provide for healthcare funding. We're just going through the results of the consultation. I'd just like to thank the 3,809 people who responded, and we'll then be coming forward with our proposals. But to be honest with you, a lot of people were saying, look, before you start doing taxes, and again, the NHS levy was meant to replace the increase of 2% in the high rate of income tax. But a lot of people are saying, look, can you please get government spending under control? And that's what this government are doing in terms of looking at government spending and the workforce. If I can come on to the Tynwald Auditor General, yeah. The tag to his friends, this was somebody appointed by Tynwald, really to drive the quality of audit right across government, including local government, in terms of value for money. And looking at his work stream, I think he's into year two of the job now. He is starting now he's developed some of the protocols for audit to look at various parts of government, particularly in terms of health and social care, and trying to drive that value for money. But it is a very, very much a target that he's been given to look at making sure that he can provide value for money savings right across government. And I'm looking forward to those results.
Okay. The public may ask sometimes, we have an Auditor General tasked with finding efficiencies. The public may ask, why weren't they found anyway? Why weren't they discovered? Why weren't they notified about anyway?
We've been driving efficiencies, trying to get increased productivity right across government for years. That's now accelerated, particularly with access to new technology. So even today, you've got online ability to buy your prescription season pass. The ways so that reduces paper, reduces the need to have people to deal with those tasks. And we've seen the first reduction in the overall public service workforce as we develop that efficiency and productivity. The Tynwald Auditor General was a position created by Tynwald, by a Tynwald resolution, to go the next step further and make sure that audit is taking place right across government. In terms of Treasury, we have our own internal audit that looks into various parts of government, looks into various departments, and will root out those practices that aren't efficient and try to increase efficiency. So it's something that's been going on for years, something that will carry on as we try to make sure that taxpayers get value for money.
Okay, Andrew, you're live with Dr. Allinson.
Hi, Dr. Allinson. Please, if we have the Auditor General, can you explain to the listeners why the money is being spent on an additional ministerial salary for Mr. Tim Crookall as Minister Without Portfolio, who, from what you've just described, appears to be doing the same job? Why do we need him if the Auditor General is there to do what Tim Crookall is allegedly doing and has already spent £567,000 on, if I'm right? And we could make some money, make some savings instantly by reducing, by dismissing him from Comin.
Okay, well, thanks very much for your question, Andrew. I think they are very different. I mean, the Chief Minister decided that he wanted a Minister Without Portfolio really to drive forward some of the efficiencies and productivity that was going on right across government, which was above and beyond an individual department. And some of the stuff that Tim Crookall's been looking into in terms of driving those efficiencies is very, very important. Because at the end of the day, what people have been telling council ministers when we've done the very successful roadshows, both this year and last, is they want to see a smarter government, they want to see a more efficient and productive government, and want to see a government that gives that value for money. Now, Tim Crookall does that, and I really value his role in terms of the Council of Ministers. The Timbald Auditor General is very different. That's far more about accountancy processes, about some of the financial regulations, and driving the best practice in audit, as well as looking in a forensic way, terms of various value for money projects that he's doing. So they are complementary, but they are very different. One's political, the other is very much more financial.
Andrew?
Please then, when are we going to see what the deliverables are for the Minister Without Portfolio and how much money has actually been saved by his Doge department?
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I did take the mickey out of him when I saw Elon Musk with his chainsaw. I think Tim Crookall's far more subtle in terms of his ability to work with departments and make sure that the savings that are achieved do not directly harm the provision of public services. So they have announced already some significant efficiency savings. We will be reporting in terms of the island plan and looking at those efficiency savings, how those can be done both now but also sustained into the future.
Okay, thanks, Andrew.
Thanks now. Cheers now.
A note in from Stuart in Laxey, who just said the horse trams were cut from the promenade scheme using the powers of the Treasury Act, allowing Comin to override the vote of Timbald. Does the minister see this as anti-democratic? Will he commit to funding the completion of the horse trams that Timbald's backed many times? And it's obvious that the department is attempting to stall again until after the election, the horse trams.
So thank you very, very much for the question. And actually, when we were doing the roadshows, this was one of the hot topics, certainly in terms of Douglas. Your listener's quite right that it was removed from the overall schedule at the time, just to try to get the prom finished, and that was effective. The plans are still there. I understand that Dr. Michelle Hayward, the Minister for Infrastructure, is looking again at coming forward to Treasury, and we will consider that, you know, in terms of value for money, to put the horse tram tracks down and restore that entire track as it was before. Mm-hmm. But that needs to be balanced against all the other competing bids that are coming forward for some of the capital projects. Again, one of your early listeners talked about vanity projects. We need to make sure that where we spend taxpayers' money, it's done in the right way to drive our economy and benefit the people of this island. But I'm certainly, you know, looking forward to seeing that revenue bid, the capital bid when it comes forward.
Okay. Regarding, you mentioned efficiencies, we've got a note in from Dawn who just said, at the moment, it seems like the medical unions are lining up against Manx Care, the BMA or what have you. They never talk about productivity. They only talk about wages and salary. So is it time to talk to the unions about productivity in the health service?
Yes, it is. And some of that work was carried out last year. If people can remember, we Tim Walz voted for quite a large amount of money, over £20 million, to be spent in what was very much a recovery programme, driving down waiting lists. And some of that was bringing people from across to do lots of hip operations, eye operations, cataract surgery, but also at the same time to look at what we were doing here. And they found some interesting things in terms of using more modern techniques, such as an epidural anaesthetic for doing hip replacements rather than a general anaesthetic, and using topical anaesthetics for doing cataract surgery. You could do an awful lot more operations in the same operating list, the same 2 or 3 hour list. And those that efficiency, that using new technology to do more with the same resources, has been going forward right across health. I think she makes a very good point about the medical profession on the Isle of Man. When you come to the island, there is still the need to keep up to date with these modern techniques. And I'd like to see the Isle of Man Medical Society and the BMA really embrace some of the real work that's going on in the health service to try to improve efficiency and productivity and deliver better services for people where and when they need it.
Okay, William, who just said you've talked about tax quite a bit, you've talked about income tax, however, there's one tax that everybody pays, and that is VAT. So how important is VAT to the Isle of Man, and has anybody ever considered scrapping VAT?
So thank you very much for that. I mean, VAT is incredibly important for the Isle of Man. When you look at our overall government income, so the budget of this year showed that the amount of money that we get in was 1.389 billion pounds. Of that, VAT was 388 million. That's above income tax, which is 330 million. So it's a huge contribution.
So we raise more in VAT than in income tax?
Yep, we do. It's because it's charged on goods and services,
right,
just rather than just on income earned. So it's by far the biggest source of revenue for the Isle of Man government that's then spent on behalf of the Isle of Man people. We recently went through it. So every 5 years, we sit down and work out with the UK how that the total receipts are shared between the two of us. And we managed to conclude that in March. And that's stabilised now the revenue coming into the Isle of Man for the next 5 years. It is very important for us. If we were to scrap that, I mean, if you look at health and social care, for instance, the total budget of that, in terms of expenditure, was 387 million. So that's very slightly less than VAT. If we were to scrap VAT, where do we get that money from? And that's the hard reality in terms of we have some very comprehensive and quite expensive public services, but we are a low tax jurisdiction, and it's trying to get that balance right.
We have 30 seconds. There's an election in 14 months' time. Have you considered your future, Dr. Allinson?
I'm trying not to get distracted by an election. We've got a job to do now. As your listeners have said, there's some really pressing points that need to be done, and that's what I'll be doing from between now and next September.
Okay, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
And thanks also to Alex on the phones. Back tomorrow.